You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yen.
And if you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we had been more informed on when we started out in our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path and just to have a fun conversation with fellow creatives.
So I saw that you had listed some really great reading material this week.
Yeah.
And you just did something at the library.
I sure did. So I was over at the Ypsilanti District Library. The Ypsi District Library hosts the STEAM Cafes, where basically they bring in professionals from different industries, different careers to speak with teenagers and kind of introduce them to different career options from the perspectives of these, you know, experts. And so I was able to come in and share a little bit about what it means to be a motion designer and a brand designer.
Oh, cool.
And it was so fun. Like, I'm always a little bit nervous when I speak to kids because I'm just out of touch. I'm quickly realizing that I'm already obsolete, which is fine. But it was really great to be able to, you know, share a little bit about my background and how, you know, I became a motion designer, how I went from freelancing to working in tech and kind of trying to be as transparent and honest with them about what that process really looks like. Because definitely for me, when I was going through it, I didn't really know. I didn't have all the mentors that I wish I could have had. So however I'm able to help, you know, share and provide some insight into what freelancing is like, what it's like to work in tech, the kinds of skill sets that I have, the kind of software that I use, the kind of groups and people that I collaborate with, you know, sharing all of these things with them, even though, you know, they might be younger, it might not all, you know, immediately click, but at least, you know they have somebody that they can reach out to. And if they ever have questions, I'm there for them. So it was a lot of fun. And hopefully I'll be able to come back and do it again, because I thought it was great.
That's so cool that you did that. They're really lucky that they got to see that you're working in a professional space and that you're accessible. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we see professions and we're wondering, how did they do that? Yeah. How could I ask them something? Mm-hmm. And you're just there and ready
exactly.
to be responsive.
Totally.
Okay. Yesterday I did my little bit of paid public service mm-hmm. work. Yeah. I was at Washtenaw Technical Middle College, WTMC.
Yeah.
Did I get that right? Okay. That is the middle college out of Washtenaw Community College. And I got to work with freshmen yesterday mm-hmm. in the theater. So two double classes of three sections. Mm-hmm. And I guess, what is that? Like 180 students yeah. now know what graphic recording and sketch notes
nice.
Are. And we went through a whole warm up. It's just like when I work with my corporate or nonprofit clients, I taught the students that everything we draw is a shape, everything that we imagine to that we want to learn or study starts with the idea or a sensory experience. So not just that I told you to go buy a kiwi, but that you could imagine what the kiwi skin feels like or what it might taste like. And then if you draw it, that's a totally different experience, right? So how can you apply that to learning the dates about voting rights? Mm. I mean, there's some really dry content, but hopefully I imparted something with the kids that will resonate.
That's so fantastic. I love that you were able to do that. And I kind of wish I could have been in that class ages ago and learned what graphic recording is. Because I remember when you first kind of told me what you did, and I was like, I've never heard that term before. That actually sounds really, really fun and kind of it's complex, but in an artistic way, which seems very rewarding.
Yeah, when I'm explaining it to the students, I feel really weird standing up there and saying to the students, you could get paid to do this. I'm just drawing doodles all day. And it's kind of ridiculous, but they appreciated
yeah.
it. Our guest today is a dear friend. She is such a talented soul in our community. Lynette Lau founded Invisible Engines in 2001, naming for the unseen desires that power us to make things, inspiration, imagination, and the impulse to reach out and connect to each other. She has over 20 years of experience designing for nonprofits of all sizes in Southeast Michigan and beyond. Prior to Invisible Engines, Lynette worked as an in-house designer for startups, the Atlanta Jewish Times and Style Magazine. She holds a BFA in design and painting and an MA in creative writing. She teaches in the interdisciplinary creative writing program at Eastern Michigan University and is the president of the Association of Businesses of Color and serves on the board of Hero Nation.
Amazing.
Thank you for being here, Lynette.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I've known your practice for some time, and I feel like you just navigate it so beautifully. But I also know that behind the scenes, you and I have talked for years about the struggle of how do we price? How do we value? How do we show other people the value of ourselves, the work that we do? And that to take from our episode with Donald, like this is all very squishy. It doesn't have a shape, and it's hard to define that to clients. So I just want to know, like, how has your definition of value shifted over the years in the work that you do?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because we have talked about it a lot over the years in your backyard, all over town. and I think that it's really important to have those ongoing dialogue because it's always shifting. It's like a river, this idea. And I think we should always be thinking about it because we're always growing, right? And this idea of value, it's such a strange word because, you know, as thinking about value, there's like your internal value, and then there's the value that the world has on your work. And then there's like something in between that maybe is like the negotiated value of both of those things. So it's just like this word that you can look at from so many different angles. And like if your own skills are changing, if your understanding of yourself is changing all the time, like that's moving, the world's moving all the time. So so we have to discuss it. And if you're actively thinking about it, then you're probably growing too.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good point too. So I think definitely in terms of, you know, speaking of pricing, you know, and how that nuance really scales to, like you're saying, you know, what is that value that you put on what you bring to your work and what you bring to your skill set? That's so hard, especially if you're, you know, new to whatever realm of, you know, the creative world that you're in. It's so hard to quantify. And even when I was, you know, in school, I went to WCC. And in some of those, you know, later classes before we graduated the program, you know, they teach us a little bit about, you know, the business of design and, you know, really thinking about how to position yourself as, you know, a creative business person to your clients. And pricing is, you know, it's almost so complex a subject that, you know, we just touch a little bit on it. But then when you're actually in the field and you're actually like, oh, somebody wants to pay me for my work. Somebody has asked me, what are your rates? You know, what is this going to cost? It's kind of a daunting question because it's like you don't always know, like, well, what am I worth? What is my time worth? How do I quantify this? So like, how do you do that? Like what are sort of those steps from like that scary question to actually getting there?
Well, I don't exactly know. And what I've identified is that it's really difficult because like the process for creative work has everything to do with who you are, your life experiences, your work experiences, the client, like your interaction with the client. It is so squishy, right? And then there's something too that, you know, maybe over time you can get used to the leap of knowing that you're going to figure it out, right? That you can trust that you know how to go through a process, even though it's different all the time and it's shifting, but you get more comfortable and accustomed to accepting that you're going to do it. But it's still a leap, right? So then when you're asked to put money to this leap that you're making, it can feel very awkward, right? But I think that it is something that you get accustomed to and that you start to build some trust in a mysterious, squishy process. So I guess when thinking about pricing, I think that value-based pricing is really important. Like the thing that you're making for somebody has a value to them, right? And depending on who they are, I mean, this gets feels kind of weird to explore, but but depending on like if you're asked to do an illustration for Target, for example, like the span of that and the money that they're dealing in, there's a lot more value for the same thing than if you were to do an illustration for the bowling alley.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's making me think about when you first get out of school or the first time somebody says, you're a really great artist, can you do a commission? Mm-hmm. And your 17-year-old self says, I can make $75 doing this. And you might labor and do 7 sketches before you get to the final. And then it comes out to like, you know, you end up making $1.25 an hour. Mm-hmm. And then the first time that I received a commission request to do a mural in a home where I thought, if I have to pay for all this paint and then the gas back and forth and then my time that I'm there and then the actual mural itself, this could be a 4-figure job. And I remember shaking and writing down this number and sliding it over to the client who I mean, I think he was a doctor or worked in the medical field. And when I showed him the number, I was trembling inside. Mm. And he turned around and looked at me and he said, never be afraid to ask somebody for money and what you're worth. Mm. And that was a long time, maybe over 20, 25 years ago. And that has stayed with me always because I had a non-creative person who was willing to pay that price say that to me. And I've tried to keep that in the back of my mind so that I'm not sitting here hemming and hawing over, should I, you know, charge this premium for X amount of work that I'm doing? And and I think, Lynette, when you and I have talked about it in the past, and Hafsa and I have touched on it too, it's like, do we know what our worth is contrasted with the next designer or creative doing the same thing in the market, right? Like, are they fretting over these 5-7% hikes that we're doing year by year? Are they also considering all of these things that we tend to worry over? Or are we doing it as women or femmes in the community where maybe men don't think about it this way, or they just charge the premium year after year and it's just accepted. Mm. You know, like I'm wondering how we set ourselves up in that space.
I'm starting to think that this idea of charge what you're worth is a really problematic one for women and for people of color who have been told they're not worth as much or haven't seen themselves any place, like not in sitcoms, not in business, not in movies. So I'm starting to think the antidote to that is we're not, don't charge what you're worth. Don't even think about it. Just charge what other people are charging.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well, that's the whole episode.
That's it.
Because I don't, if I go there, then I get really like it's shaped by being sensitive. Mm. It's shaped by like life experiences, by the culture that I grew up in. It's shaped by wanting to just be helpful and not thinking about money at all, as if I don't have to pay for things in the world. So it's too much. Like, it stops me. And I'm not saying that I don't. It's a really new idea to think about, like, well, maybe it's just a number. And maybe you should just plop out something and see if somebody agrees.
And then, but you hit it on the nail on the head earlier when you said, oh, it's your life experience, right? Like, you could certainly not be charging what you were charging 10 years ago, right? The expertise and the efficiency in which you're able to produce the same product now is worth so much more.
Yeah. And that's why hourly, I think, is usually the wrong way to go about it, because it quantifies your brain and your heart in a way that can't be quantified. So maybe you have a secret formula of knowing how many hours it might take, but don't like get into the position where you're clocking in, because that's so not what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's an interesting conversation, too, because I think for me, I was sort of, and I forget how I learned this along the way, but sort of finding that difference between, you know, how to charge for your time, you know, in the interest of being transparent to the client who's like, well, you know, okay, what is it? You know, you've given me this number here. Where does this number come from in terms of, you know, workable hours? And so for me, it's always been sort of a process of either breaking things down into, you know, I'm spending X amount of time to, you know, produce a storyboard. And from that storyboard, I'm going to produce, you know, an animation. There's going to be revisions and stuff like that. So I can either do, you know, I'm this much per hour or I'm this much per day. And in that way, I'm kind of giving the client at least some visibility into like, this is the amount of time that you can expect to spend with me and my skill set. And you know, you're going to get, you know, a certain amount of quality because, you know, you looked at my website, you wanted to work, you know, like something I produced, that's what it's going to cost to get, you know, this level of fidelity at this level of time. So I guess I'm interested in like other perspectives around that too, because like to this point of, you know, really thinking about valuing yourself and, you know, the kind of work that you're doing. I don't know. It feels complex to me. Maybe it's always just been complex and I'm just like, been in this place where I'm trying to squish it into something that just works so I don't have to think about it. Like a set it and forget it kind of situation. Yeah. I don't know.
It is. It's so complex. I wonder, do you think that your clients need that type of hourly transparency? Or if they could trust that you were going to get it done, could it just be like your business, how long it takes? It can be good for you or not good for you to do project-based rates.
Yeah, absolutely.
But my feeling is, as you know, it's not, time is not the defining thing here, you know?
Yeah.
Like somebody could be very slow.
Right.
And make a lot, like three times more money, or they could be pretty efficient and experienced and make less money, which doesn't seem right to me. Like that's what makes me know that time's not the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So when you do get to the nitty gritty of talking about the money part, how do you go about managing that? Do you do it through just an email communication? Do you communicate with them on Zoom or in person? Like, how do you present your proposal and scope of services?
You know, I would like to get better. I was going to say more better. I would like to get more better at actually talking about money with clients because there is something important about knowing like what their budget is and what they have in mind, you know. So I know that, you know, one way to approach it is to say, you know, do you have a budget in mind? Right. And that leaves it really open. And then you can know if you're even in the same world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I have sometimes approached things that way. And sometimes you'll be really surprised because you don't know what they're, what is in their mind or what they've budgeted for the year. And it can be really different. And then I think that, you know, a lot of times too, if I haven't broached that, then I might be just turning over a proposal. And then, but the risk there is that maybe that we're not even a good fit for each other, you know?
Right. In negotiations, I remember once you're not supposed to ask somebody, what is your budget? But like you said, if you are, that's kind of a non-starter. If you just flat out ask somebody, I feel like most of the time, if I'm having a Zoom consultation with someone, I already know what the precedent was for a project like this. And it's better to be straightforward and get that out front. Because I hope that at our ages, that nobody's going to say, my budget is $200 and they just took half an hour of your time, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, I think that is a really smart way to go about it is to just be transparent and say, this is your budget. This is the range in which I've worked on a project like this. And this was what the outlook, the output was. Mm-hmm. And most of the time that matches because that transparency is so appreciated from both parties.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said about giving your range. And, you know, most of the time when I ask people what their budget is, they don't know, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or they're unwilling. But most of the time they just don't know at all. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, a lot of times my clients have less experience working with a creative consultant, sure. right? So they don't know. So then I do end up giving the range of like, typically, you know, this kind of project could be between this and this. Mm. And then it might scare them.
They're like, oh, that's the reality. Yeah.
But also, I mean, that is useful too, because people don't know how to themselves, they don't know what things cost, and they also don't know what goes into it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of educating, and especially as you're growing and your work costs more,
yeah.
right? Or what you do is something they don't quite have a grasp on what the process is, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of educating, and I think hand-holding, right? Mm. And it's totally fine if you're not a good match, you know, you can refer right. them to somebody else yeah. or just stay connected mm-hmm. or, you know, you never know what's going to happen,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. I've had clients, you know, realize the extent of what they're asking for and the cost of it, and then go write a grant for and get that money and come back 2 years later.
Mm. You know? Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, that is something that you navigate working in the nonprofit space, right? Like kind of the hurry up to wait kind of thing sometimes.
Mm. Yeah.
That's yeah. so interesting. I was just, one of my questions to this point was going to be like, how does working with a nonprofit versus more of a corporate entity sort of shift that value and that pricing conversation, like in your experience?
You know, I've worked in the nonprofit space for 20 years, mm-hmm. and I think, so I don't really know. I don't have clients that are corporate mm-hmm. or like making lots of dough and or selling things,
sure.
right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the nonprofit space still exists in our capitalist society, mm-hmm. and they hire people and mm-hmm. provide jobs to people,
yes.
and they buy things and they pay utilities. Mm-hmm. So, and they also have to like make money right. to uh-huh. sustain themselves too. So I've come to not think about it too mm-hmm. differently, although, you know, it inspires squishy feelings in me. Because I believe in the causes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like in my mind, like it's just a sector, mm-hmm. right? Like healthcare is.
Right.
You know?
Right. That makes me wonder too. You've been such a great relationship builder, and I've seen you be so friendly with many of your clients and your partners in the community. How do you navigate a friendly relationship when someone is paying you for your services? Like, how do you continue the partnership, the friendship, when it involves a transaction?
Yeah.
Well, collaboration has nothing to do with the money part of it in a way. I mean, in my brain, I guess I imagine, you know, I do the invoicing, I get paid, but in my world of my work, it's all like care and doing the work yeah. together. Uh-huh. So I never feel like an employee, and I never feel beholden or that I've been bought uh-huh. or anything. I feel like we get to work together, you know, and that I think makes it easy. And then like my clients working in the community, it's very easy, uh-huh. you know, because I am working with organizations who are making the world so much better, mm. who are my friends,
yeah, yeah.
who are my neighbors. So I feel really super privileged about that. And, you know, I have rarely encountered clients who try to who think about me as somebody that they're paying. I feel like ideally the money recedes and the relationship and the work takes precedent.
Yeah, I've kind of had a similar sort of situation where, you know, I've worked with people who are friends or, you know, maybe they were, you know, just regular old colleagues at one point, but now they're like colleagues slash friend. And, you know, we might have, you know, a project that we're working on together that is transactional, but like, I guess I've been lucky in that they're always very concerned that like everybody is getting compensated for their time. Like we may be friends, you know, we're having fun working on this, but, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, that sort of little bottom line is being fulfilled and that we're all square, which I guess I appreciate that approach too. But at the end of the day, it's like, I just like working with my friends and doing cool things. And it's like, oh my God, we get to produce something that we're all proud of, you know, and hopefully the client is proud too. And yeah, it's just, it's wholesome in a weird way.
Yeah, to work with friends, I think is a little bit of a different thing than to become friends with clients too. But when working with friends, yeah, just thinking, you have to make it a little bit objective. Yes. And I do, I would totally struggle with giving you a proposal for something, you know?
I struggled when I did that with you. Yeah. Like, should I work with Lynette ever again? Because I feel like, you know, the pricing structure is so different for a friend versus a client that becomes a friend.
Sure.
I'm always like, should I have charged that much?
Or do I owe you money, Yen?
No, not at all. We invited you on the podcast today because we have an outstanding invoice.
Just saying. Plot twist.
Not at all. The total opposite of that. I mean, it was such a gracious and generous process.
Yes.
But that's exactly my point, right? Yeah. Like there's all of these underlying sentiments because you do care for your community and friends so much that you don't ever want to do or say the wrong thing.
Exactly.
But when you are working with really enlightened people, like the two people I'm sitting with here today, it's so easy to get the work done because it just doesn't feel like work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the best, right?
It is.
When work is a love fest.
Yeah. A love fest. I'm going to love fest today, guys, not work.
It's the best.
That's great. Lynette, you're an ever student. I always see you picking up new tools and listening to podcasts and just being the most curious. So what resources or books or things are you using right now that are really inspiring and driving your practice?
Well, I really love to read and listen to podcasts really widely. And I think that everything that you put in helps. And I mean, I don't do it with the idea of help, but I think like you're going about your own life accumulates things. Yeah. And it's really, so I love to, I don't know. I just am really loving a book now called Matrix. I think Yen has maybe heard me talk about this three times, so I'm sorry.
I want to know. Wait a minute.
But it's a fiction book by Lauren Groff, and it's about a 12th century nun who is running an abbey, and it was a very poor one and not well run, and she comes in as a 16-year-old and just fixes everything, like grows an orchard so they have food. Mm-hmm. And she just, it's like a business story and it's beautifully written. It's not a business story, but it is. It's this like gorgeous story of a matriarchy, which is really appealing to me right now. And just so satisfying in every way. I'm really loving that. Ooh. And somehow that's not business, but it is.
Sure.
It's the story of getting things done beautifully. And then business-wise, I like this. I follow this guy named Jonathan Stark, and he and another consultant named Rochelle Moulton have a podcast called The Business of Authority. And they're always talking about all kinds of things that just feel very relevant to me. And he is somebody that's a big advocate for value-based, not hourly pricing. And I think he's got another podcast that I don't listen to called Ditching Hourly. And it's about how hourly billing makes no sense and no one should be doing it.
I need to listen to this.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I also this morning listened to a podcast called You're Wrong About. Have you heard this one?
No.
It's a podcast that explores things that you think you know the story, but you don't really know the story. So I listened to it was about Amy Winehouse. And a lot of times it relates to media and how media skims the surface of things and then everybody thinks they know something.
Sure.
So it's they did one on Karen Carpenter. I mean, sounds very tragic. Uh-huh. And actually there's a lot of tragedy in it. You know, like you can but you know, I don't know how that is going to relate to anything, but.
But it does. Both of those women were iconic creatives.
Exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely ties in. No. Well, and I love that too, because it's a great example. What was that term you used? Ever learning? I love that.
Ever student, ever learning. You are. Yeah. You really are.
Well, I love that term too, because it's like we kind of have to be. We should always be, you know, learning and, you know, looking out for different perspectives that, you know, might change ours or influence ours. And it's like that sort of breadth of, you know, jumping from this topic to that topic and listening to, you know, experts in those fields. Like that is so important as a creative, you know, to never just be sort of boxed into your own or what you think is, you know, directly related to your career. I think like for me, I don't really, this is embarrassing to admit, I'm not really a listener of podcasts, even though I'm doing a podcast, but there are some really good podcasts that I've listened to specifically in the cybersecurity realm, since that's where I work as a designer. And some of them are around like marketing and information security, because often the marketing can be, you know, pretty full of like FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, there's a lot of sort of questionable marketing tactics that people, you know, who are security buyers aren't fans of. And this one podcast, hopefully we can link to it on the website, basically goes into some examples around really suspect marketing tactics that security professionals have encountered that weren't great. And, you know, they kind of break down why they weren't great, why they didn't work, and how they would have done it better in a way that might have, you know, resulted in a sale or in them actually checking out a website or a product. And for me, you know, obviously I'm not in the security realm. I'm a designer, but I work within a marketing organization. And so that's a really helpful perspective for me to understand, you know, where the security audience that I am creating content for, like where are their heads at? How are they thinking? I guess it's sort of a roundabout way to say that you have to be ever student, ever learning, and ever, you know, reaching out for those different perspectives to really understand, you know, the world around you and hopefully to make your craft better and what you do.
I love that. I was listening to a podcast and I wrote something down that I heard, and it was find something new to love. And I just love that so much that like the forward momentum of that and the way that like, you know, there's a lot of stuff you might not like, but find the thing that you love, you know, and that there's, it's abundant out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. It might be a TV show.
Yes.
It might be like a color.
Right.
Could be a sandwich. Mm-hmm.
I like all of those things.
I know.
For sandwich right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of a tactic, did you by chance come up with something for our listeners and students out there to dig into?
I have two, but one is just an idea. So this belongs to somebody else. I don't remember. I read this or heard it somewhere. But it was this exercise of like, somebody, you could practice this with someone, and I'd go, Yen, how much does it cost to have you at a conference for 3 hours? And then you would practice saying, $1 million, Lynette.
Oh, okay. Let's play that game.
And you would just kind of like do that until you like numb out to the idea of like whatever is a lot of money, you know?
Oh.
And that it could shift your mind from being like, oh, what am I worth? And like the angst that goes along with money to just being like an objective thing.
Right.
Oh,
so I thought that was was interesting and also funny.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Do you remember during COVID how we used to say goodbye to each other? Lynette would say to me, add a zero. She would just say, you go quote that job, add a zero.
Add a zero. I love that.
I have met like some younger creatives who've, when I've seen what they're charging, they really do need to add a zero, you know? Because you just don't know and you feel, you know, there's something where you do have to be a little realistic and understand like what you can promise and where you are in the field of things. But like for the most part, like times it by two or add a zero.
Right.
Add two zeros. Like it's, I think just thinking about it a little bit more objectively is interesting.
Uh-huh.
And then the second thing that I really think is more actionable of a tactic and not just an exercise is, my whole world changed when I started using a tool to invoice. So I started with FreshBooks and there was something that was such a relief because before that I was making invoices in InDesign. It felt like I was writing things all the time. It was such a drag to find somebody's address and I avoided it a lot. But a tool and the way that you just make the thing and then you send it out, like it, the way that it sends it for you felt like a helper or an assistant. And that was the distance that I needed sometimes to get that done.
Yes, one step of detachment to get that process paid.
And there's so many free tools too. It doesn't have to be FreshBooks, but also it's like professionalizes you too.
Exactly.
So that's a good early step.
And then also I love this point that you've made so much, and I think something like that really helps you to sort of put your finances in like order for yourself, because I think it's easy to sort of, you know, hide from our bank accounts and hide from those numbers and sort of, you know, shove our sort of financial realities to the side. I may be speaking of my own experience, but it's like having that transparency of actually being able to see like, this is your income. These are the people you've been working for. This is how it's grown over time, because that's what a lot of these softwares will allow you to do. I use Wave, which is very similar to that. And like, it gives you a graph of like, you know, how much income you've gotten over the month. You can track your clients. It'll generate invoices for you. You can do all of this kind of really handy data and metrics tracking. And it just helps you to build, like, ideally a healthier sort of financial picture of who you are, which is so huge. Like, I think we could talk about that for ages, too. It's just like, you know, how to build a healthy financial future as a creative and, you know, scale it, keep it consistent, you know, keep paying the bills, you know, being happy with where you are financially. I think kind of to that point, I wanted to read out this or our kind of tactic as well, which very closely related to what Lynette just talked about, really taking a moment to just think seriously about how you should value your work and what you want that ideal income to look like. You know, not just a fluffy number. We all want to get that sort of $1 million, you know, number. Ideally, I would love that. But, you know, in realistic terms, what do we want to charge people, you know, based on what we quantifiably know about our skill sets, what they're worth in, you know, the location that we're in, our region, the local economy and stuff like that. What is that rate or that salary or that yearly salary look like for you? Or what do you want it to look like?
And to piggyback onto that, I just came up with a homework assignment. Nice. I once had our friend and peer, Juliet, speak with a professional practice class that I was lecturing at. And she did something that was really refreshing that none of the other speakers did. And the students just lost their minds. She walked us through every job she had ever had. Mm-hmm. And at the end of each point, she told us how much she made at that job. And it blew my mind. And then as soon as we hung up over Zoom, everybody was just chatting and commenting, I can't believe she told us, and I can't believe she made that much. Or they just had all kinds of feelings around that. So my homework assignment this week is to find three or four people that are in the field that you're interested in going into, that you feel comfortable having a very frank conversation with. Because like Lynette said, how can we invoice for what our peer is invoicing if we don't know how much they're making?
Exactly.
I had that exact experience knowing that my cousin was charging a lot more in the Bay Area.
Mm.
But yes, like Hafsa said, it has everything to do with the local economy and what that market can support.
Mm.
So ask three or four people what they make per year mm-hmm. or what they charge on average per project. I'm not saying cold call your icon, your idol icon that's doing the work, but somebody that is accessible, that is willing to have a conversation with you.
Yes, 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 underscore. I think this has been a fantastic conversation. Lynette, is there anything else that you want to add kind of, you know, from your perspective and where you sit as a graphic designer and a brand designer in the realm, you know, and kind of, you know, learning and scaling your own, you know, knowledge of how to do all that squishy business stuff? Like, what's your sort of final takeaway for our listeners?
I don't know. I think it's just keep being active at digesting all of these ideas and keep thinking about it. And also think about like what people make in salaries. I think that's really important too, because it is much harder to work for yourself and you have to pay for your own insurance, for example, and your own computer and things like that. So I think that's a really, you know, it might even seem like a modest goal to look up what you might be paid inside a company, but that's a really big goal for a small business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that you should at least be doing that, which is not easy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I learned so much today. I learn something every time we chat. Thank you so much, Lynette.
I loved being here. Thanks so much.
On the next episode, we will have Chris Johnson, the owner of Johnsonese Brokerage, a firm in Chicago that specializes in arts and culture insurance for everything from artwork to documentary to theater. If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Cadence Podcast, or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. We are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, recording from the cozy podcast studio at Venue by 4M. We hope that wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.